Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. If you'd like to sign up for our Daily Digest, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Do you love music but don't have the energy to find new stuff? Can't decide whether you want to hear indie rock or hip-hop, electronic music or singer-songwriters? Then tune into Another Late Night every first Saturday at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Community Radio. Or stream online at kboo.fm/anotherlatenight. Where we've got it all.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations of programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the first Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Oregon Attorney General will investigate the Fox Corporation. Nurses from three Providence medical facilities vote to authorize a strike. And police in Redmond, Oregon, investigate a potential hate crime against a city councilor. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, June 6th, 2023. I'm Eric Leuschner. Oregon's Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum will investigate the Fox Corporation. Their board allegedly breached fiduciary duties by allowing Fox News to broadcast false claims about the 2020 presidential elections. Those claims already cost the broadcaster almost $800 million in a lawsuit. Rosenblum said, quote, "We hope to hold the board accountable and protect the long-term value of Oregon's investment in Fox Corp." In April, Fox News agreed to pay Dominion Voting Systems $787.5 million in the voting machine company's lawsuit. Dominion argued that the news outlet owned by Fox Corp damaged Dominion's reputation by pushing phony conspiracy theories that claimed its equipment switched votes from former President Donald Trump to Democrat Joe Biden. Fox appeared to settle to avoid going to trial for about half of the amount that was originally requested. The Oregon Department of Justice said the investigation will explore leading a lawsuit on behalf of the company's harmed investors, which include Oregon's public employees. The department said, quote, "They have a duty to manage the company competently, honestly, and in a manner that prevents foreseeable and catastrophic financial harm like that inflicted upon the company's shareholders by Dominion and Smartmatic suits," end quote. The Oregon Investment Council, which sets state investment policy, said through State Treasurer Tobias Reed, quote, "We invest in Oregon's public servants and we aim to hold Fox's board of directors, including Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch, accountable for their decisions. Investigating Fox's books and records is a necessary and significant step in fulfilling our obligation to our beneficiaries," end quote. As of the end of May, the Oregon Pension Fund owned nearly 170,000 shares of Class A common stock and some 92,000 Class B shares in Fox. Another voting machine company, Smartmatic USA, has also sued Fox News over Fox News's false elections claims. Brian Nick, Chief Communications Officer and Executive Vice President of Fox Corp., declined to comment on Rosenblum's announcement. If your allergies have been packing a punch this spring, you're not imagining it. The Willamette Valley set a new record for grass pollen counts on Tuesday morning. Eugene residents saw the highest level in 25 years of record keeping. Pollen counts are expected to continue to rise this week, with hot, dry, and windy weather funneling plumes of pollen through the Willamette Valley. The all-time record for grass pollen levels might be broken in the next 2 weeks, according to the Oregon Allergy Associates. 200 is considered a high grass pollen count. In the next 2 weeks, levels could surpass 1,100, the previous record. Pollen in the Willamette Valley is funneled from the north to the south, producing the highest level in Eugene and lessening as you continue north in the valley. Experts recommend keeping doors and windows closed and using air conditioning to help reduce the pollen in your air at home. A surgical mask could also help reduce allergy symptoms from grass pollen. Nurses at three Providence medical facilities have voted to authorize a strike. They're organized with the Oregon Nurses Association Union and cover about 1,800 staff across the locations. Nurses at Providence Portland, Providence Seaside, and Providence Home Health and Hospice voted to strike, nearly unanimously, according to the union. The nurses are required to give the hospitals 10 days' notice before calling a strike so Providence can make arrangements. The union says the strike authorization is in response to unfair labor practices and eroding standards at the Providence facilities. That includes things like unsafe amounts of patients per nurse, overuse of temporary nurses, and a failure to retain medical caregivers with experience. Contract negotiations with Providence have been ongoing since last fall. Nate Wheeler is a bargaining unit chair for Providence Seaside. Wheeler said, quote, "Seaside patients deserve more than unsafe staffing levels and poorly functioning equipment. We need Providence to invest in us. We are a critical access hospital, and the next closest hospital is a 40-minute drive, which means Seaside residents come here for their care. The cost to live here has grown exponentially, and it's past time we have pay equity with Portland nurses, especially if we want to retain and recruit nurses to care for our community," end quote. Negotiations are scheduled to continue this week. Police in Redmond, Oregon, are investigating a racist act against a city councilor. Mayor Ed Fitch arrived to work on Monday to see a dead raccoon had been placed in his office with a racist note directed to city councilor Clifford Evelyn, who is black. Raccoon imagery has long been used as an insulty anti-black caricature with roots in American slavery. Evelyn said, quote, "This is a hate crime, plain and simple. I have complete confidence in the Redmond Police Department." It is not the first racist incident to come up in Redmond in recent years. A black teen found a threatening message on her doorstep in 2020. The following year, a resident displayed a Confederate flag at the city's 4th of July parade. Evelyn said, quote, "The people in this part of the country are just going to have to catch up. It's just the knuckleheads that can't get on track, and they're causing harm to everyone and making us look bad," end quote. Former Vice President Mike Pence has announced his plans to run for office of the president in 2024. He served under President Trump from 2016 to 2020. Pence filed his documents to register for the campaign, but will make a formal media announcement this Wednesday in Des Moines, Iowa. The former governor and congressman will join other ambitious Republican contestants like President Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, and millionaire Vivek Ramaswamy. Trump pulled Pence from his Indiana governor seat in 2016 to be his running mate. The Republican campaign has several issues for the voters. These include tight abortion laws, immigration issues and border security, and the rejection of the woke culture in America. Pence will have to show some creativity to sway voters to turn to him as they leave Trump and DeSantis, who have been the most vocal contestants to date. Born in Columbus, Indiana, Pence turns 64 this Wednesday, the day he plans to make the announcement for office. Former Vice President Mike Pence files to run for president. FBI Director Chris Wray is the subject of new hearings, and a Muslim rights group is suing a Michigan sheriff for discriminatory policies. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. Former Vice President Mike Pence officially launched his presidential bid on Tuesday and will make a formal announcement Wednesday in Iowa. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis have already entered the race. Former President Donald Trump still leads in public opinion polls. DeSantis is seen as his biggest rival.
Given the severity and complexity of the allegations contained within this record, Congress must investigate further. Americans have lost trust in the FBI's ability to enforce the law impartially and demand answers, transparency, and accountability.
House Oversight and Reform Committee Chair James Comer announced contempt of Congress hearings will begin Thursday against Federal Bureau of Investigations Director Chris Wray. Comer said this stems from Wray's failure to produce certain documents the committee requested in its investigation of Hunter Biden and allegations President Joe Biden was involved in a bribery scheme when he was vice president. Wallowa is the latest Oregon county to vote to join in favor of becoming part of Idaho by literally moving the border. A dozen Oregon counties have voted to secede from the state in the last 3 years. Rural Oregon native Rosalind Mock says people in these areas want to be part of the decision-making process. She thinks urban Oregonians can play a significant role in healing the state's divides.
Knowing that understanding and respecting one another doesn't mean we always have to agree with each other, but knowing our rural and urban neighbors makes it really hard to divide us.
FBI data finds American Jewish people are the victims of 63% of reported religiously motivated hate crimes, and the Biden administration recently unveiled a new plan to combat rising anti-Semitism. The new plan aims to heighten safety and security for Jewish communities and reverse the normalization of anti-Semitism and Jewish discrimination by increasing awareness and education. Myra Clark Siegel with the American Jewish Committee says this plan is a major step in the right direction.
This strategy includes more than 200 policy proposals with 100 plus action steps for the federal government across its branches and entities. And I think that that really reflects the importance of all of society dealing with this kind of hatred.
The Michigan chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations filed a lawsuit against the Kent County Sheriff's Office for forcing a woman to remove her hijab in a booking photo. The lawsuit claims the sheriff's office violated the religious rights of 21-year-old Jana Haig from Grand Rapids by asking her to take two booking photos, one with and one without her hijab. Amy Ducaray, an attorney with the council, says the two booking photo policy is unnecessary, adding removal of the hijab in front of non-related men is highly offensive to practicing Muslim women.
Policies are set by the jail or the institution and not necessarily through a state law. I don't believe that there's any laws in any states that protect a woman's right to wear the hijab explicitly.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
June is National Safety Month, and advocacy groups across the country are awaiting passage of the Railway Safety Act of 2023 into law to protect communities by preventing future train derailments. The Senate Bill 576 passed out of committee in May and has moved on to the U.S. Senate floor. Danielle Smith has more on the story in Tennessee.
During National Safety Month, Congress is being urged to take swift action to pass the Rail Safety Act of 2023. The measure aims to prevent future disastrous train derailments, such as the most recent East Palestine, Ohio, and the Maryville, Tennessee derailment in 2015. Brittany Kohler is Legislative Director for Transportation and Infrastructure at the National League of Cities. She says the Railway Safety Act is about stopping the continuous cycle of train wrecks, often with hazardous material on board, that put the health and safety of communities at risk.
We need to reevaluate rail safety and ensure that we are keeping up with the modernizations that are needed. And what we can do together is pass this bill and continue to work on rail safety.
The bill would require state emergency personnel to be notified of what chemicals are on board train cars coming through the their communities. It also would mandate the use of defect detection technology, which advocates say could have prevented the East Palestine derailment. The act is headed to the Senate floor after passing committee in May. Kohler says the National League of Cities has created detailed rail safety recommendations to encourage Congress to consider steps that would make railways and communities safer. She says those recommendations include ensuring financial fines are used first for the community impacted.
What we hope to see is that fines will create better behavior that are more appropriate to what's happening. And we've seen a lot of incidents just continue because there aren't any consequences. And we think that these fines have an opportunity to be used for good.
Kohler says that more than 500 mayors and leaders sent letters to Congress for the timely passage of the Railway Safety Act. And she recommends Tennesseans also voice their concerns about the importance of safety and prevention of train derailments in the Volunteer State. I'm Danielle Smith, Tennessee News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, For the Wild. Tonight's weather will be sunny for the rest of the day with a low of 53. Tomorrow's weather will be similarly hot and sunny with a high of 88 degrees. Today in history, in 1889, downtown Seattle was entirely destroyed by the Great Seattle Fire. The Seattle Fire Department was officially established 4 months later. Afterwards, Seattle built with brick, with new structures sitting 20 feet above the original street level. The quote of the day is from American actress Anne Bancroft, who died this day in 2005. She said, quote, "The challenge whenever you create anything is to persevere and push away the negative voices. And the more you accomplish, the louder they get. The key is to shut them off and trust in your heart where you're going." Phil Knight, the billionaire owner of Nike, and his partner Alan Smolinski have made a few futile attempts to buy the Portland Trail Blazers basketball franchise in the past. Unfortunately, Jody Allen, the estate executor who runs the franchise, is not keen to do the sale. Knight's plan would be to buy the franchise and then sell it and turn the proceeds to charity. This is against the wishes of the original owner of the Trail Blazers. He regarded the team as the mark of Portland and its home team fans. There's a chance that the team could be moved to a different city once it falls under new ownership. Knight is the richest man in Oregon, worth an estimated $40 billion, and is now 85 years old. He's also voiced plans to improve the infrastructure surrounding the Moda Center. The former Blazers owner died in 2018 of cancer, and it is believed that his will indicates that the Blazers and the Seahawks teams could be sold and the proceeds should be turned to charity by 2028. The lease contract for the Blazers with Moda Center expires in 2025, and star player Damian Lillard's contract expires in 2027. An indigenous human rights defender was found dead in Honduras. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Another indigenous human rights defender has been killed in Honduras. The activist's body was found last week in a river located in a region his community had succeeded in gaining back from land grabbers. Maria Martin reports.
Martin Morales Martinez was the leader of the Garifuna community of Triunfo de la Cruz in northern Honduras. The activist was a member of a committee in charge of implementing a property agreement in favor of his community that came as a result of a ruling by the International International Court of Human Rights. Morales had been receiving death threats for several months and had asked for government protection. At least four other human rights defenders in the area have been killed or disappeared this year alone. Human rights organizations say the Garifuna community of Triunfo de la Cruz has been the victim of reprisals and violence since they began an effort to reclaim their ancestral lands. Honduras is the fifth most dangerous country worldwide for indigenous environmental and land defenders. For National Native News, I'm Maria Martin.
The University of Montana has hired a new coordinator to lead efforts to return indigenous remains held at the college back to tribal custody. Montana Public Radio's John Hooks has more.
Courtney Little Axe began working on the repatriation of indigenous remains and artifacts held at the University of Montana as an intern in the anthropology department in 2015. This spring, she returned to her alma mater as the first official coordinator of the university's efforts.
Watching it grow from, 2015 to now, it's pretty powerful and it's pretty meaningful for me to be able to fill this position.
Little Axe is Northern Cheyenne, Absentee Shawnee, and Seminole, and grew up on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in southeastern Montana. She has degrees from UM and Haskell Indian Nations University. Little Axe said it is crucial to have indigenous people leading the effort to return their cultural artifacts.
Because if you don't understand where these items come into play in a certain culture, then I don't think you'll understand the significance or the importance of why we need to get them back.
A database of indigenous remains created by ProPublica shows UM has made the remains of 42 indigenous people available to return to tribes. While at least 25 are still being studied to determine a tribal identity before they can be returned. A law passed in 1990 requires federally funded institutions like UM to endeavor to return indigenous remains and other artifacts to their tribes. So far, the university has struggled to comply with the law without a dedicated coordinator. For National Native News, I'm John Hooks.
The New Mexico Court of Appeals has ruled Albuquerque Public Schools, or APS, must follow state anti-discrimination laws. The ruling revives an anti-discrimination lawsuit involving an incident at an Albuquerque high school in 2018, where a teacher is accused of cutting a Native student's hair and calling another student a bloody Indian on Halloween in the classroom. The American Civil Liberties Union lawsuit accuses APS and the former teacher of creating a hostile learning environment and discriminating against Native American students. It also alleges APS failed to properly train teachers on the harms of racism and to provide for its student safety. The incident sparked outrage from the Native community. Students, family members, and grassroots groups held protests at school board meetings. The appeals court overrules a 2021 district court decision. The lawsuit has been returned to district court for a hearing on the merits of the case. Albuquerque Public Schools is said to be considering an appeal. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
What is Putin really thinking? It's a debate that international watchers have about leaders in any international conflict. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Today I want to talk about the Putin mystery. One of the many mind games that the intelligence community plays during a war is figuring out what opposing leaders are thinking. In the case of Vladimir Putin, the experts are, not surprisingly, at odds. Two longtime foreign correspondents for the New York Times report, quote, Mr. Putin increasingly looks like a commander-in-chief in absentia. In public, he says next to nothing about the course of the war and betrays little concern about Russia's setbacks. Instead, he is telegraphing more clearly than ever that his strategy is to wait out Ukraine and the West and that he thinks he can win by exhausting his foes. Other reporting suggests that Putin is nervous about Ukraine's penetration of Russian defenses and attacks on targets inside Russia. He may also be looking over his shoulder at Yevgeny Prigozhin, the Wagner mercenary group leader whose frontline fighting has made him a formidable political figure. Let's face it, no one knows what Putin is thinking. Most likely is that both versions of his thinking are correct. He's confident he can wait out NATO, and he's worried about the way the war is working out. On one hand, his confidence has some merit. The costs for the U.S. and the European Union of supporting Ukraine are skyrocketing, $40 billion for the U.S. alone. President Zelensky's wish list is endless. So far, political support in the U.S. and EU legislatures remains fairly firm, but cracks are appearing with no clear end to the war in sight. Hungary and Turkey are outliers on the war, refusing to impose sanctions on Russia and perhaps secretly admiring Putin's repressive politics. Russia's economy has been hurt, but oil revenues are higher than ever. Putin remains very popular with the Russian masses. On the other hand, Putin has every reason to worry. So far, his war strategy has failed. Ammunition and weapons are in short supply. Casualties are very high. Western sanctions are biting, and Ukraine's counteroffensive looms. Despite all the bombardments of Ukraine's cities, Ukraine's morale remains high, while that of Russian troops is questionable. The Russian oligarchy remains loyal to Putin, but there probably are more than a few people like Prigozhin who believe Putin has bitten off more than he can chew. Which Putin is the current one, the confident man or the warrior, has consequences for NATO and U.S. war policy. If he's viewed as supremely confident, his adversaries need to contemplate a very long slog with no peace talks on the horizon. But if Putin is worried about how the war is going, the strategic choice is to add to his worries, such as by providing advanced weapons to Ukraine, most recently F-16 jet fighters. Either way, two key questions are: what, if anything, might provoke Putin to do something drastic, such as carrying the war into Poland or using a tactical nuclear weapon? Are his threats mere bluff, or should they be taken as reason for caution? At the moment, the Biden administration seems to have decided that Putin is all bluster, but remains a determined adversary who, despite repeated strategic blunders, will only stop fighting when defeated. He has issued many threats, but he hasn't acted on the most dire of them. Thus, two writers for the Washington Post say, quote, his bluffing has given U.S. and European leaders some confidence they can continue doing so without severe consequences, but to what extent remains one of the conflict's most dangerous uncertainties. To what extent is the real difficulty, however? No one knows Putin's red line, perhaps including Putin himself. What may keep Putin in the game for the foreseeable future is his vision of Russian greatness, Western aggression, and Ukraine's illegitimacy. He must believe that white Christian supremacy will ultimately prevail, first in Russia's near abroad, and then throughout Europe. He has the support or neutrality of numerous developing countries, China's economic and political backing, and plenty of customers for Russian oil. And if only Donald Trump can regain the presidency, Putin will have a partner who will significantly reduce U.S. involvement in the war. In fact, will resolve it in 24 hours, as Trump recently said. Thus, we can expect Russia to fight on at least through the fall of 2024, when Trump will reemerge to appease Russia. Putin may think that so long as Ukraine cannot win, Russia cannot lose. And Biden may believe that so long as Ukraine cannot lose, Russia cannot win. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, speaking in Helsinki, Finland on June 2nd, said exactly that. Quote, Putin thinks even if he loses the short game, he can still win the long game. Blinken ruled out a ceasefire, saying it would legitimize Russia's land grab, and argued for continued fighting to punish Russia. It's a recipe for continued large-scale suffering in a war without end. Is that prospect really in the best interest of the U.S. or Ukraine? I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, June 6th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Mel Gertov, and Tapiwa Kapura. Our producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Danielle Smith, Edwin J. Vieira, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Village Building Convergence from June 10th to 18th, 2023. This is an annual community building event bringing together community members and neighborhoods to engage in grassroots placemaking and sustainable community building throughout Portland. More information on how to get involved in this year's Village Building Convergence can be found on the website villagebuildingconvergence.com.
Upon a star, makes no difference who you are.
This Thursday morning on KBOO, the theme is dreams. Starting at 10, we have a very special episode of Jonesy for you. Our guests are Kristen and Vila Jokinen, who dreamed of bicycling from Alaska to Argentina, and despite some very challenging conditions, made it so. Kristen chronicles the trip in her new book, Joyride. Then, at 11, the dream theme continues with a special hour-long episode of Words and Pictures. Host SW Concert and guests preview the Crafting Pinocchio exhibition coming to the Portland Art Museum. Go behind the scenes of the animated film about a puppet who wished to be a real boy, and you know how that turned out. So tune in this Thursday morning, June 8th at 10. Dreams really can come true.
If you will it, dude, it is no dream.
Making contact.
Hi there. Today on Making Contact, we are so excited to share an episode from our brand new partner, the Queen's Memory Podcast. This show